now, where I believe he did his PhD as well.
Yes.
So he's going to talk to us today about boundary Hamiltonian theory for capture-population places.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for attention, attending the talk. So today, I will talk about the boundary Hamiltonian theory for gap topological phases in two dimensions. So first I will review the model I will use, and then I will talk about how to construct the Hamiltonian theory or the boundary theory, and then finally I will talk about the properties for the ground states and also the boundary excitations in the model. So topological phases. So I think basically to quickly review. So basically it's a new quantum phases at low temperature this is the familiar fashion of quantum Hall effect. At low temperature and strong magnetic field, we observe the strong quantum effect. So the properties of the topological phases, they belong to the new quantum phases. It has no local order parameters. And typically, we can study properties of the ground state degeneracy, which is protected by the which is topologically protected. And we can also use the fractional charge and fractional statistics to characterize the topological phases. And the third properties, the typical property is the boundary bulk correspondence, and which we will focus on this property today. For boundary theory, and also there's the quantum entanglement at macroscopic distance scales. So for the to study topological phases in the effective theory approach, what effective theories we can use to study topological phases? So. We can use the mean field theories, which are transimens theory. It could be transimens matter field theory or pure transimens theories. Another type is the discrete models. So transimens theories are continuum model. Using discrete models, we have the Levin-1 string neck models. We also have K-types models. And recently, we have a lot of study in three dimensions for topological phases. But in today's talk, I will talk about the two-dimensional theories for boundary theory. So the advantage is in the discrete models, we can compute more things. We can do computations easily. So we can study many concrete quantities. And also we have a beautiful mathematical structures, and also we have many beautiful physical results figured out in two dimensions using the discrete models. So this is what I'm going to talk about today. So I will first review the string net model, and then I will talk about how to construct the boundary Hamiltonian in the string net model. And finally, we're using this boundary Hamiltonian to study the ground states and boundary excitations. So the best example, or the simplest example to to introduce the string line model is the Z2 gauge theory. It has many names. It is also known as K-type Torrey code. And so at the beginning, you have a lattice. You have a trivalent lattice. And you can put spins on the links. So that's the Hilbert space. We have links on this edge. Then the Hamiltonian, for Hamiltonian, we have two turns. The Q turn defined at vertices and B turn defined at plaquettes. So for Z2 model, we can use the Pauli matrix to write on the Hamiltonian. Basically, the Q term means if you are using the sigma z basis as the spins on the links, then Q just means if we have odd number of the spin downs. So for BP plaquette, which is defined at plaquettes, the action of BP is to flip the spins. So what's the result of this Hamiltonian? So actually for gauge theory, we know that if we understand this model as a Z2 gauge theory, then we know from the example of the electromagnetic field theories, the gauge field in quantum mechanics, which is the gauge potential in continuum theory, in discrete theory, then it becomes the Z2 glue element at the links. Then the degrees of freedom of gauge field can be divided into three classes. The first is the, we know which the charge at the vertices, and the second is the flux at the plaquettes. This corresponds to the electric field strength and the magnetic field strength. And from the degrees of freedom on the links to the degrees of freedom at the vertices and plaquettes, we have three. We have the third type, which is a non-contractible loop along the torus. There are two loops. So this has the physical effects of a Harrington bond effect in quantum mechanics. So if we look at these degrees of the gauge degrees of freedom in this picture, then the Hamiltonian, it's just says that so this is a Q. Q turn just means the red arrow should be positive. Otherwise, Q is zero if we have a spin down red arrow. So the B turn is if B is one, then that's we have an eigenstate with zero flux at the plaquette. If we have a B equals to zero eigenstate, then we have a non-trivial Z2 flux at the plaquette. So in this presentation, then the Hamiltonian can be exactly solved, and we have the quasi particles in the excitations, which corresponds to Z2 charge, Z2 flux, and also the charge flux composites. And besides this, there's the third type of degrees of freedom does not obviously enter the Hamiltonian, which means the Hamiltonian has no direct effect on these yellow loops. So this implies we have a ground state degeneracy, which is due to this degrees of freedom. So in this Z2 gauge theory, we have four types of quasi particles, and we also have the ground state degeneracy, which is four. And in such type of gauge field theories, this is not a coincidence. Actually, the number of particle species in the elementary excitations is equal to the ground state degeneracy. So there's one-to-one correspondence between the ground state subspace and the quasi-particle types in excitations. Okay, so that's a review of the Z2 model. So what is string map model? String map model is basically the same type. So there is the generalization. First, the Z2 group, which is the degrees of freedom on the links, can be generalized to a finite group. So, or more rigorous, more precisely, we're using the representations of Z2. Then it's generalized to the representations of a finite group. And we can also, more generally, it could be the quantum groups. In the final days, we can use a unitary fusion category to describe all such type of data, so that's of input data, which characterize the essential structure in the representation theories of groups or quantum groups. Then, this is what happens in the Hilbert space. Then in the Hamiltonian, the Pauli matrices, which represent the Z2 group action, becomes the Wigner signature symbol for finite groups. And for quantum groups, it could be the Q deformed signature symbols. And for the general mathematical structure, a unitary fusion category, we have a signature symbols for in this category. And for the to solve the and such models can be exactly solved. The excitations have the quasi particles of the Z2 charge flux composites. Then, in the finite group case, it becomes dions because, for example, for a non-abelian group, the charge and the flux, when we exchange the position of these, the charge and flux, and there is non-trivial matrix, non-trivial braiding matrix when we exchange the two particles. So the charge and flux are mixed together. So we need to use dions. And the mathematical structure, the general mathematical structure is the quantum double to describe the quasi particles and also the ground state, degenerate ground state space. So this is the data. So this is the input data and the Hamiltonian, which looks a lot of tensors. But basically, these G's are the signature symbols. So, in the group case, like SU2, this is just a summation of four copies of clash Gordon coefficients. And these conditions just means in SU2 case, in group case, if you have three spins, you can couple first two spins and then couple to the third spin, or you can couple the second and the third spins, and then couple this subsystem to the first spin. Then in the final result, you should expect the physical result that should not depend on this mathematical computation. So this is just the compatible equation illustrating this compatibility condition and some symmetries. So I do not want to expand the Hamiltonian in details. I just want to point out that in a Hilbert space, the J in the Hilbert space, at each link, we assign the labels J, which are finite. If you want, you can put integers like from 0 to 0, 1 to n. And these Q and Bs are the generalization of the operators in Z2 case. So we do not talk about the Hamiltonian in details, but instead, I want to show you some topological feature. So what is essential feature in this model? Why it is? So, for example, if this is a torus, so the dashed lines just means I want to identify the top and bottom boundary. So this is just a periodic condition, and also for left and right. So this is a torus. Then there is a theorem. So any Trivandrum graph. So actually given any two Trivandrum graphs, you can deform one graph to the other one. You can always do this by a few elementary moves. Actually, in two dimensions, there are only three types of elementary moves. So for example, you can pull this line down to here and push up this line to here. So that's one elementary moves. So the theorem says, between any two Trivandrum graphs, we can deform from one to the other by these elementary moves. So for example, you can do this. So then what is... So what is the topological feature I want to say here is, in two dimensions, there are three elementary moves which guarantees we can mutate from any graph to any other graph. And to these moves, we can assign a linear transformation. So these are unitary transformations. Then the ground state in such model are invariant under any deformation, which means the physics in the ground state does not depend on the local structures of the graphs.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
You just made a statement that any two Trivandrum graphs are related by these
yes.
local moves.
Yes.
The trivials, I mean, is easy to see that? It doesn't seem very obvious. How do you turn that into a rigorous statement? I mean, intuitively, I believe you, but how do I see that mathematically?
Mathematically?
Yeah, so I have some graphs, and I know it's Trivandrum. I have the labels on the links of the graph.
That's something like to manipulate on the tree structures. So finally, you will always, so the problem can be turned to, you can always turn from one tree to another tree structure in two dimensions. In higher dimensions, I don't know how to prove that. But in two dimensions, the short answer is, it's something like in graph theory, you manipulate the trees from one to the other. But
in the sense of plain passage.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that's for the ground state. Actually, the topological feature also applies to the quasi-particles. So how do we look at the quasi-particles? We can get some topological quantum numbers on these quasi-particles on the elementary excitations. So this can be described as follows. So if we have a quasi-particle, for example, at some location near that plaquette, and then we can move it along some path. And after the hopping of the quasi-particles, we can deform the graphs. So finally, we get a final state presented in this way. You can do that in another order, which means you can deform the graph first, and then you move the quasi-particles along some path. So here in this model, in this string line model, there is a property that the hopping operator the hopping operator of this quasi-particle from one location to the same final location, this hopping operator does not depend on the path which you move the quasi-particle. And also, this operator commutes with the deformation described here. So the elementary moves are called partial move here. So such topological feature implies that we can use some transformation to characterize such a topological feature, which means you find some observable, find some operator which commutes with the Hamiltonian and also commutes with this partial move, the deformation, and then you solve for the eigenvalues of these observables. Then you get the good quantum numbers. Such good quantum numbers are called topological quantum numbers. So they could be the ground state degeneracy and could be the modulate matrices, which is also on the ground state, and also the quasi-particle Brady statistics. Okay, so we have just reviewed the string line model. We emphasize on this topological feature of the ground states and the quasi-particle in the elementary excitations. Okay, so now we are in the second part. We are trying to find some boundary Hamiltonian for the gap topological phases. So in Z2 case, for example, in Z2 case, if we start with this, we start at this situation, we have a boundary and we can put some tails, 1, 2, 3, on the boundary, then what kind of the Hamiltonian we can put? So there is two types of the boundary Hamiltonian, which is gapped. So first one is the summation of all sigma z's. So in this case, you can see these operators, sigma z's, will commute with the bulk Hamiltonian, the bulk operators in the bulk Hamiltonian, the q and b's. And also they commute with each other. So that means that for each term, we have a projection operators, and these projection operators are commuting with with each other and also commuting with the operators in the bulk. So, what can we see? What result can we get from this Hamiltonian? So, if we have two charge in a bulk, we create a one pair of charge and move one to the boundary, and in the final day, the charge is moved to the tail. According to this Hamiltonian, at the boundary there is a quartz particle. So that means it has some energy penalty for a charge to occupy the tail 3. So we call this is the charge type. If we have a flux in a bulk moving to the boundary, then after the flux occupies some plaquettes, some open plaquettes at the boundary, it turns out to be the ground state. There's no energy penalty if we apply this Hamiltonian. So the second type of boundary is the summations of the product of sigma x. Then in a similar way, we can create a pair of flux and move the flux to a boundary. Then the boundary leaving at a the flux leaving at a boundary will take some energy in this Hamiltonian. So we call this as the flux type. So to summarize, in the first type of boundary, the flux will becomes to the vacuum on the boundary, and the charge and the flux charge composite will becomes the boundary charge. So in the second type of the Hamiltonian, the charge will move to the, when the charge moves to the boundary, it becomes the vacuum on the boundary. So that's why we call the charge type and flux type the boundary. So okay, so so that's for the Z2 model. For a streamline model, we want a gap Hamiltonian. So how can we do this? How do we find the boundary Hamiltonian? So the clue is to look at the topological feature on the boundary, just like what we did in the bulk. So on the boundary, we have tails. Then what is the deformation of the graph on the boundary? What is the elementary move on the boundary? So since it's one-dimensional, so the only deformation is to collapse the neighboring degrees of freedom. So 2 becomes 1, and we can collapse more. And the opposite way is to divide 1 degrees of freedom into 2. So that's from 1 tail and divide it into 2 tails, like this. So that's the only basic moves. But on the boundary, any two boundary graph can be deformed into each other by such elementary moves. So this can be realized on the lattice model. So we need to consider the bulk part because such deformation should be compatible with the deformation in the bulk. So for example, on this trivalent lattice, Yeah, we can glue these two tails first, and then using the already known the basic moves in the book, then we realize this elementary move. So know that this is this realization consists of two parts. First is to glue the neighboring tails, or divide one tail into two. And second part is the usual bulk moves. So for example, this is the partial move in the bulk as usual. So we combine these two types of the moves, and we realize the deformation of the boundary. Okay, so what we need actually is to consider the boundary deformation. We need to design a unity transformation associated to the boundary deformation, and we construct the Hamiltonian such that the ground state is invariant under such deformation. Okay, so the key part is to glue the two neighboring tails, or divide one tail into two. And all the rest part is already considered in the bulk partial moves. So for example, in the Z2 case, if we have two spins, then we can just glue them together. And if we have the plus minus, then we get minus. So it's just a multiplication. And from 1 to 2, then we actually it's a linear combination. So it's actually we list all possible configurations. So so one tail becomes to two. For example, we have a one spin down tail, then we have a summation of the spin up, spin down, and spin down, spin up. So in Z2 case, the Hamiltonian we just look at actually has this topological feature. That means any two boundaries in the Z2 graph, in the Z2 theory, any two boundaries can be deformed by these elementary moves. So and under these unitary transformations, the ground state will be invariant. Okay, so the generalization is in general model, the key part is to find the unitary transformation associated to this basic move. So we just assume a general coefficient, Fijk, then we list the compatible condition. So actually it looks like this. This forms the Frobenius algebra. So this, that means what we, so we start with a Hilbert space. That means we start with a Hilbert space such that we have tails on the boundary. If we assume there are some degrees of freedom on the tails, and we try to construct some Hamiltonian which is acting on the tails, then the ground state invariance under the graph deformation requires that the Hamiltonian operators should be constructed using a Frobenius algebra. So actually, this is the final look. It looks like this. We have the tails. So the labels on the tail are labeled by A. Then the Hamiltonian has also two tones, the Qs and Bs. The Qs, the Qs just means the tail label should be in a subset LA, which is the subset of labels the subset of the all string types in the book. And the BP, it looks like this, but it consists of the signature symbols and the F coefficients, we call the algebra coefficient. So actually it has two parts. So it looks complicated, but actually this part, this is almost the same with the BP operator in the bulk. So the right part deals with the action on the bulk degrees of freedom, which is is acting in the same way as the BPS, BP in the bulk. And the new part is the F on the tails. So yeah. So I'm not going to the details of this Hamiltonian, but basically I want to emphasize that this is a result of the ground state invariance under the boundary deformation. So the obtained Hamiltonian has two terms, Qs and Bs. This Q bar and B bars on the boundary commutes with the bulk terms Q and Bs. So such model is actually solvable. Okay. So we have constructed a boundary Hamiltonian. Then immediately the question is, what properties we have? Then we need to look at the ground states and the excitations, particularly in the boundary excitations. So the ground state on the disk, since we already know what happens in the bulk, so we assume that in the bulk there's no any non-trivial quasi-particle, so we can ignore the bulk part by the graph deformation. Then the disk, then the ground state on the disk, it's just reduced to a circle with the tails pointing to the outside. So the result is the phi, the ground state wave function of this system is looks like a tensor product state, which means there is a tensor living at each equivalent vertex. And what are these tensors? So if we associate, if we put this tensor into each vertex, triangular vertex. So just use this diagram to present this wave function, then we locally look at two neighboring tails. Then the Hamiltonian acting on this state locally will be presented in this way. So rho is the tensor in the ground state wave function. And these five copies of A's and two dots, which is the Frobenius algebra action used in the Hamiltonian operator. So I have not explained how to solve the boundary Hamiltonian in the previous slides, but I do show you some pictures of this from this transformation to from this left part to the right part. So actually, this is the self-consistent condition we use to define the Frobenius algebra. So by this illustration, using the picture, using the graphical presentation, we can compute the action of the BP operator in a boundary Hamiltonian on this state. Then finally, the BP operator in the Hamiltonian equals to 1, in which is embedded in the ground state. Then the key point in this computation is this step. So which means if we have a ground state, we have a state written as the tensor product state in this form, then what is the condition on rho on a tensor to make it a ground state? Then the condition is this. Which means, if you start with this basis, then you can use the unitary transformation we define in the book to transform from this basis to this basis. If on the both sides we have the same tensor rho, so we use two copies of rho here. Then in the final state, we also have a rho here. Then this will guarantee the state is a ground state wave function. And mathematically, this equation is known as the A modulus in C, which is just a mathematical name for the representation. So it looks, if this is a group, so if A is a group, then this equation has a meaning that if you have two group elements, so you use a group element G1 acting on a representation space, and then followed by another action of G2, then the final state is equivalent to only one action of G1 times G2. So that's the meaning of this equation. So this is called A modulus in C. So the ground state on the disk, so if you have only one boundary, then the ground state is characterized by the A modulus. So in this example shown here, there's no quasi particle in the bulk. But if there is some quasi particles, then on the boundary, there will be some non-trivial linear combination of these tensor product states. But it's also characterized by the A modulus rule. Okay, so if we consider a cylinder, which means we have two boundaries, we have two boundary components, and we do not care the thermal fluctuations in the bulk, so we assume there's no quasi particles in the bulk. We only we are only interested on the boundary effects. Then we can collapse the bulk part. So we make a cylinder to be a circle. So this can be realized by the graph deformation, since this is also a trivalent, graph with two boundaries. So we can always make any cylinder to become this reduced graph. Then here, I just show the result. The ground state, it also looks like it's also a tensor product state. You have a tensor rho associated to each trivalent, to each two trivalent vertex, actually, like for AN and BN. Then we want to analyze the state in similar way, just as what we did on the disk. So what we do is to first, for each row associated to each trivalent vertex, we label row n on this four valent vertex. And we apply the Hamiltonian operator. So what we got is something like this. We apply BP operator, and the state becomes this form. Then if the state is a ground state, the BP should be 1, since the ground state is the BP equals to 1 eigenstate at any P. Then this gives us so this is equivalent to this condition, which is the generalization of the A module we have just seen. So previously on a disk, it's one side. We have a condition with these capital A's on right side, and on the left hand side there's nothing there. So this structure is called the AB bimodule. Bimodule means we can have the action on the left and also on the right. So this is the generalization of the condition on the previous slide. So that this equation defines the AB bimodule in category C. So the in physics, that means on a disk with one boundary, the ground state has some topological degrees of freedom, which is labeled by A module, and now on a cylinder you have two boundaries. So one boundary is described by A module, the other is described by B module. So it seems that we just put them together, we can use a pair label, but these two types of degrees of freedom, they do not commute with each other. When they put together, we need to take a minimum set due to some non-commutativity between the two types of boundary degrees of freedoms. Then the result is AB bimodule. Okay, so for example, after so many abstract formulations, we take this simple example. So in Z2 case, on cylinder, then the ground state in the bulk, that's the label 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, then there is a constraint which reduced the boundary Hamiltonian into a simple polymetric form. So here I will just show you the result. So I have talked about the A modules, but what are A modules? Here, A modules are A modules are just the boundary charge or boundary flux. So here there are two boundary components. Each component has two types, two boundary types. So totally, there are four possible boundary types. Then the boundary type is labeled by the algebra A, which could take value of 0 or 0 plus 1. They correspond to the charge type and flux type. Yeah. So the four possible types are you have charge type, charge flux, or flux charge, or flux flux on both boundaries. Okay. For excitations, we can do that's on one boundary. For excitations, we have two tools to study the excitations in the Hamiltonian approach. The one is to define the measurement, which means you try to find some projection operator which commutes with the Hamiltonian and to measure the local quasiparticles. So for measurement, which means we can find a set of orthonormal projection operators. Another tool is the Hopping operator, which can be used to study the topological feature of the quasiparticles. So we can move quasiparticles which does not depend on the local structure of the graph. Okay, so I do not show you the formulation to write on the measurement operators and Hopping operators, but I'm using the graphical presentation, which means if you have a quasiparticle at the tail, in the middle tail, then you can use the AA bimodule tensor to define the projection operator, which characterizes the local quantum number of this quasiparticle. So this gives us the measurement operator to define which quasiparticle it is. And the second graph is a braiding operator, which defines if we have one quasiparticle and we want to move the quasiparticle along the boundary, then this quasiparticle will go across the tails, the degrees of freedom on the tails. So we need to define a unitary operator to specify how these quasiparticles move along the boundary. And if these quasiparticles are topological, then this Hopping operator should commute with the boundary deformation. Okay, so in one short sentence, the elementary excitations, the quasiparticles are classified by the AA bimodules. Okay. So what are the results? So we review that the bulk Hamiltonian is defined by a unitary fusion category. And the boundary Hamiltonian in our approach, we can define the boundary Hamiltonian by an algebra in C, then the elementary boundary excitations are identified by the A bimodules in C. And we also studied the cylinder ground states. If we have boundaries specified by A type and B type boundaries, then the cylinder ground states are identified by the AB bimodules in C. And particularly, if we have two boundaries with the same boundary type, then the cylinder ground states are one-to-one corresponding to the elementary boundary excitations, which means you can count the number of particle species, the quasi-particle species in the excitations. And you can also count the ground state degeneracy of the cylinder system, and these two numbers should be equal. And moreover, you can make a one-to-one correspondence to one ground state and to one quasi-particle in the excitation. Okay, so these are the main results. Yeah. Thank you for attention.
Yeah, so can you remind me what was known in Kataya Kong previously?
Tori code?
This Kataya Kong paper that classifies the boundaries of string models?
So the specific the statement is the a boundary can be specified. A gap boundary can be specified by a module category over C. C is the unitary fusion category, the unitary fusion category to define the bulk Hamiltonian. And the quasi particles on the boundary is the module functors of this module category. So if you use N to specify the module category, then the quasi particles are the module functors of M. So the relation to this approach is that in Kitov's approach, more precisely, they are actually left module category over C. And here, to be more precise, it's the right A modules on one boundary. So when we right on the disk ground state, we use the right A modules. And there is a mathematical theorem that for each modular tensor, for each left module category over C, there always exists an algebra in C such that the module category is equivalent to the category of all right A modules. So this is the equivalence at the Hilbert space level. That means at the degrees of freedom level. And for the quasi-particles level, there is another equivalence. The module functors of the module category is equivalent to the A bimodules. Yeah. So that means the category of quasi-particles described here is equivalent to the quasi-particles category described in Kitov's approach.
Right. And for the cylinder ground states, do these correspond to what they get for codimension 2 defects in that paper? I've forgotten what the structure that they... I mean, is this thing that I'm talking about? Codimension 2 defects, so this is the...
A domain wall.
Section points of two domain walls. Is this the same? Well, okay, if you don't remember, then that's fine. But I was just wondering whether that's the same as the cylinder ground states, because it seems like it should be close to the defect.
A defect between two different boundaries, or okay. Well,
we can check.
Yeah, it's not shown here.
Maybe I have one question.
Yes.
You talked earlier about ground state invariance under these patch numbers.
Yes.
That form the lattice graph. Is there anything that could be said about excited states of that particular Hamiltonian? And are there other excited states which are also invariant under the patch numbers?
No. When I talk about the hopping operator of the quasi particles, now I assume along the path, there's no, near the path, there's no quasi particles in the bulk. So also, if you have two different paths going from one location to another location, then the enclosed area, enclosed by these two paths, this area should not contain quasi particles. Otherwise, there should be some gradient exchange statistics.
There are no further questions. Let's thank you, Tim, again.